guess so.
It is 4 o'clock, so I think we're going to start, if everyone's good with that. Okay. Welcome to the Columbus Book Festival. This is the Romanticy-esque, that part's important. This is the Romanticy-esque panel. I'm April Watkins. This is Molly Biggs. We are the Book Besties podcast.
Woo!
Thank you. We have just wrapped our 8th season, and season 9 starts in September. We've been live streaming all weekend, and we'll continue to do so. All of that's on our social media.
You can find that on our TikTok and Instagram.
I am an Ohio native. So, OH.
Woo!
That's my people. I live in Virginia now, coastal Virginia, and I'm a children's librarian, so when I evaluate books, yes, my library people, when I evaluate books, I look at it as a consumer for what we would want to put on our shelves. Molly is originally from upstate New York, but she lives in the DMV, Maryland area now. And Molly is a Coast Guard veteran, which is very cool. Oh. She is also a writer, and she looks at books from the author's perspective.
And I will defend you, but I will also burn you to the ground if I think you did it wrong. It's a balance, guys.
She's pretty honest. So we have three incredible authors. If you haven't read their books yet,
Welcome to the panel. You're going to be fine.
We got some
this.
Vibes today. So we have Andrea Stewart.
Woo!
We have,
woo!
Yes.
Yeah.
Jennifer K. Lambert, or Jeffy.
Woo! Yeah.
We have Ehibor Okusun.
Woo! Yes!
Yeah! I've been practicing.
And I'm going to give bios for you all, if that's good.
Sure.
Okay, so we'll start with you, Andrea. Andrea is the Sunday Times bestselling author of the Drowning Empire trilogy and The Gods Below, and look at the paperback cover.
Yes, girl.
She works as a writing coach at the Novelry. The Bone Shard Daughter was her debut and was a finalist for numerous awards. Mm-hmm. I mean,
numerous.
But I lost all of them, just to be clear.
We weren't gonna bring that up, man.
She's a Goodreads Choice Award and British Fantasy Award. Those were the nominations. Sorry, words. When her admittedly ambitious dreams of becoming a dragon slayer, which who isn't, didn't pan out, she instead turned to writing books. She now lives in sunny California. This is not that.
No.
And in addition to writing, can be found herding cats, looking at birds, and falling down research rabbit holes.
Which
same.
Is good.
Yeah.
Same.
All right. So Jeffy lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Also not this.
No.
With her husband of over 30 years, his chocolate lab assistance dog, two Maine Coon cats who assist no one, which because they're cats, and plentiful free-range lizards. That checks out.
Yeah.
Yep. Her high fantasy novel, Never the Roses, fell on her from out of the sky and became a dream come true. Also, look at that cover.
Yeah, seriously.
Although, does anyone have the finished
this
copy?
This is the ARC copy. Look at that. We got sprayed edges.
Yeah.
Check it out. We love a sprayed edge.
Fancy.
So she also writes under the name Jeffy Kennedy, where she is a multi-award winning and best-selling author, primarily in epic fantasy romance, and is a past president of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association.
Yeah.
Woo! She is represented by Sarah Younger of Nancy Yost Literary Agency. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. And Ehi is the best-selling author of speculative fiction. Also, look at her cover. Like, in and of itself, that cover, I want it. I want to read it.
Mm-hmm. Give it to me.
I lost my place. Okay.
It's fine. I cut down my bio massively. Just to make it easier. But yes.
Okay. Raised across four continents, she now resides in the U.S., where she can be found dreaming up stories and falling into new worlds, which
yes,
I love.
Girl.
I love. All right. So welcome. So we are so thankful
and
for
thank
this
you
time.
For coming, panelists.
And we're excited to talk about your books. And there will be plenty of time for questions from the audience. We definitely want you all to have a chance to interact with these amazing authors. So are we good? We ready?
We're ready.
All right, sounds good. Ready?
Potty break. Did I potty check anybody?
No.
Hold it.
All right, so this is our first question. The topic today is romanticy-esque. So all three of you have fantasy series. These are all going to be... Jeffy, yours is going to be a series, too.
Yes.
Okay, because the way it ended, it better be.
yes.
I have questions, is what I'm saying.
Book two is already written, and there will be a book three for sure.
So all of these are fantasy series. There are, is this a little bit of romance. Do you consider yourselves to be romantasy writers?
Ooh, I mean,
what are we starting with?
I'm happy to tackle.
Okay. I actually already started.
Yeah, yeah.
Go.
So I feel like this is a thing that happens. Do I have to tall girl this? I'm not that tall, but I'm going to try.
You can tilt it.
I feel like this is such a question, right? Because romanticy is different for everyone. When I think romanticy, I think like the Sherilyn Kenyon, the like Kate Daniels series, mm-hmm. Nalini Singh, like the things where like they're like you can't have the story without the romance that we care so deeply and strongly about, but like the romance is complicated by the fantasy world around it. That's just like, you know, if you're reading Nalini Singh, you're like, this is freaking like, this is angels and demons, like, yeah. How are we gonna make this work, right? If you're reading like, you know, even like Sherilyn Kenyon, like there's so it's like if you remove one part, it's not the same story. And that's the way I see it. And I think that like, but there's also sort of like a more sort of new school of romanticism, which is, I think, is another branch that is more like the romance really takes center stage, mm-hmm. and the fantasy world is sort of like the background in which this takes center stage, right? And then I think also like people talk about like fantasy romance, which is then another branch. Mm-hmm. So I think of romanticism as something that's existed for like over 50 years, mm-hmm. and that they're just different iterations, and then the popularity for different phases of it, like it just goes, it flows. So for me, like, if I read a book that feels fantastical and huge and epic, but there's this romance that literally is like, we are honing in on it and this is what keeps me coming back, that's a romanticy for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I think romanticy, that's my definition of romanticy. And there's some people who like vary it up, who are more like, this is 80% romance, 20% fantasy. Mm-hmm. And some people who are like, okay, well, I'm gonna be honest, if it's like 90% fantasy and there's barely any romance mentioned, that's not a romanticy. Sorry, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Right, like if you just shoehorn it at the last couple pages and then they kissed, I'm like, no thank you. But there are some books that I've read that are like deeply epic that our friends have written, and I'm like, I keep thinking about this. You read Red Rose, Black Sun, and your brain is like Serapio and Shiela and everything Serapio and Shiela, and can you, I will read every book right now about them. Do you know what I mean? And some people are just like, yeah, but I just can see that very epic. And I'm like, but that's a deeply romantic epic. Can we talk about that? So that's it for me.
I think we get it a lot with historical fiction. We get it with what they love to put as women fiction, subgenres. Mm-hmm. And because fantasy is now becoming more popular with women, and we have to put a romance angle on it or women won't buy it, right? That's what the publishers are thinking. But you guys will read almost anything as long as it's badass, right, guys?
I was raised on Lord of the Rings. Like, I want some fantasy in my life.
Yes, give me a Hobbit on a journey.
Right, I'll take it.
I think it's, this table tilts on me, I'm sorry. It's important to remember that all genre categories are more or less arbitrary. So people can put a label on the shelf so you can find it. And romanticy is a reader-coined portmanteau that's only emerged in the last couple of years, right? We didn't hear it before that. When I very, very first started writing, I was told that my work fell in the cracks between genres. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my first book was published as fantasy romance, which was a term I had never heard before in my entire life. I was like, oh, is this what I'm writing? So
it's got a name.
It's got a name, right? Just find it and read it, yeah. So it's funny to me, and Ehi and I, do you go by Ehi?
Yeah.
Okay. Ehi and I were, she was asking me about Grace Draven, who has been one of my best friends for over 10 years, and she moderated an event for me. Yeah. Well, we came up together.
Right.
We were both writing this when no one knew what it was. And it's bemusing to us to have been writing this for so very long, and then everybody's like, it's a new genre, and it's called romanticy. And so we were deciding that because people call us OG romantasy writers. Which we decided stood for old granny.
Oh, love it. Take it.
So yeah, you want to call me a romantasy writer? Sure.
You'll take the pocket.
I'll take it. Yeah, well, I'll take the readers. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I like paying the mortgage. Don't get me wrong. But yeah.
Y'all are the reason the genre is so amazing.
Yeah. Yes. The girlies are complex. The girlies have complex tastes, and we see it.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so I read the panel description, and I was like, well, clearly I am the esque part of this panel, because I would not say my stuff is a romantasy. There is romance in it, but there are also what I would call romantic entanglements, where it's not really a romance. Sometimes it's fairly toxic, but there is an attraction. So I would not consider my stuff romantasy. Maybe I'll write one someday with a sweeping, grand, like tortured romance, which I would love, but currently that is not that is not what I write. So, yeah.
And I think I think because right now that is what's trending is the whole romanticy vibe. We tend to want to put authors in that when that's not necessarily what their main focus is. Like, there's definitely like a little bit of romance in yours, but what I loved about your book was the world building.
Yes.
Like, I was here for this entire, like, from the beginning. I'm like, what is this? This is incredible. And like, I'm a fantasy reader from childhood. My very first fantasy book I read was My Father's Dragon, which is very old. It's like older than me, so I am old, but it's older than me. And it was the first time that I read something that I was like, you can have a book with a dragon in it? I need these books. And they just didn't exist with females as the main characters. Yep. And so that now happening, I think, is so incredibly important that we're getting representation. But I don't think just because it has a woman in it that it has to be romantic.
Oh, no, yeah.
But that also leads to the, if a woman's a writer and it's a story about a woman, what is it called? Mm-hmm. Women's literature.
Mm-hmm. But there's no men's fiction.
Yep.
There's no men's
no
literature.
No offense, guys. But
no offense.
Right. You guys don't get gendered.
Yeah.
Right.
In the library world, there are some libraries that genrefication is how they shelve. It's not in every library. So, like, in my library, you would just all be in fiction by your last name, which is where you are, because all three of you are represented in my library. Well, yours isn't in yet. It's being processed.
It just came out Tuesday.
It just came out.
We've been waiting.
All right, so I want to talk about inspiration next. So can you all share with our audience where you got the inspiration for each of your respective book series? For the ones we're talking about.
Should we?
Someone else.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, you can start.
Okay.
These are for everybody.
It's funny that you say that, because I'm like trying to think, what was my inspiration? Because I feel like a lot of the times with books, inspiration is not that kind of lightning bolt moment where it's just one thing. It's oftentimes a combination of things that I had been wanting to talk about, or I had been kind of running over in my head over and over again. For this book, I mean, one of the inspirations was that I wanted to, for the vibes, write a a hollow world.
Yeah.
I mean, so I love the vibes of a hollow world. If you've ever read Jules Verne, like Journey to the Center of the Earth, scientifically, that is not a thing that can exist, at least not as we know it. However, this is fantasy, so we have magic. And I can make it exist for reasons. So that was one of my inspirations. Another is that, you know, I'm constantly thinking about climate change, our world. So I wanted to kind of address like ecology and everything in the book. I wanted to have a fun magic system, and I wanted to tell a story about two sisters. I have a sister, a younger sister, who I'm very close to. I'm the older one, and I always felt very responsible for her growing up. So in here, I have two orphaned sisters where the older one has almost this parental role to her, but they get separated during this cataclysmic event, and they end up on opposite sides of this clandestine war between the gods. So I kind of wanted to explore that relationship between them and what changes throughout this series, and against the backdrop of like this kind of dystopian fantasy landscape.
Mm-hmm. 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 Like, even a year or two ago, I would have totally agreed with you on the lightning bolt thing, because that's, I don't write, like, when the inspiration strikes, I tend to be very much a workhorse writer. That's why I have a lot of books under my other pen name. And, but this book, I was going through a really difficult time in my life, a very emotional time, and I was supposed to be working on two other books, one from my indie published series and one that my agent wanted, and I got the first line to this book, and that's why I said it fell on me from out of the sky. Did you notice in our bios we all talked about falling? You fall down rabbit holes, yes. And you had something too. It was like we're all falling.
Falling into new worlds.
Mm-hmm. Falling into new worlds, that was it.
I'm just constantly falling.
Yes. So I got the first line to this book, which doesn't happen to me, and what's interesting is that first line is intact. It didn't change at all through the editing process, which is very unusual.
Rare.
Yeah, like almost unique. I don't know if I know anyone else who could say that. But so I finally wrote it down. Normally I don't allow myself to write down something that's not what I'm working on. But I finally wrote it down so it would just leave me alone. And I got the next paragraph. I was like, so,
because those invisible friends, once they start talking, you better listen.
And I never believed
or they're
in
going
this,
away and never coming back.
Yeah. I've never believed in that. Like, I read Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, uh-huh. and I disagreed with her.
Oh.
But I'm sorry.
That's a but, different panel. Sorry.
Yeah, different panel. We can argue about that later. But anyway, I had to write this book. I had to, and it was as if it was being told to me. And, and it was funny because I didn't even know what it was.
Yeah.
And, okay, since you already accused me of name-dropping, Grace.
I love it.
Okay,
when we say name-drop, we'll be name-dropping you.
Oh, okay.
We're hyping you up. We're not.
I actually sent an early chunk of this to Grace because we exchange work all the time, and I'm like, I'm writing this thing that's making me write it, and I don't want to write it, and it's weird, and it's strange, and it's really different, and I don't even know what genre it is. And
apparently,
she,
it's romantic. Esque.
So she talked me out of my tree. So that was the inspiration.
Because sometimes you got to be chopped down.
Yeah. That's basically what she said.
Okay, I'm going to do the tall girl energy thing again.
Yep.
So I think for me, I had thought about what would become Forged by Blood for a very long time. And I talk about, if you've ever watched an interview, I talk about, like, dreaming about my characters. So I'm somebody who, I get my characters first, and they're very much in my head, and they will not let me function like a normal human being. Literally, my partner would wake up and be like, why are you just sitting there rocking in the dark? And I'm like, because I'm like, you know, I have to put stuff down.
Don't try to tell me how to live my life.
Because the friends are in my head and they won't go away.
Oh, like, there's this thing, like, he's always just like, yeah, I know when you're writing, because you will be in the car on something, and then you'll just get, oh, we're talking, and you just get this look on your face, and I'm like, oh, you, that's okay, yeah, all right, well, I'll get back to you when you're done. And so these characters, I thought about them for so long, mm-hmm. and I loved them for so long, and then I started putting them on the page, and I just sat there and, like, wrote the book, right? But writing is not just the initial writing process. There's editing and defining and finding the correct voice, mm-hmm. like the voice that you want, the thing you want to put forth at this time.
Yeah.
And it was a very interesting process for me because I had written this book and I didn't know if it was ever going to get published. And I was actually focused on another book when I got a call from my editor that was just like, yo, we read this book. The whole team has read this book. We want to publish it, like, mm-hmm. tomorrow. Like, what are you doing? And I was just like, you know. And I think for me, it's like, as you're working, there's so many things from your life and your paradigm, your background that influence what you write.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really sit there and think, I want to do this. I just, like, let the characters speak and be themselves.
Yes.
But as I went through the work and as I went, you know, through all this, like, there's so many themes that are poignant in the story. There is, I mean, I call it, like, you know, my post-colonial fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think we're so obsessed with the idea of, like, rebellion and revolution, but we don't think about, like, how does it come about?
Yeah.
What does it cost?
Yeah.
And we kind of do the whole good versus evil without thinking about, like, maybe it's not that simple, right? And also, like, I'd also seen, like, anytime I'd, like, read a fantasy that, like, you know, it's a fantasy world. You can really do anything, right?
Yeah.
But I'd read so many fantasies where I felt like we were sort of, like, replicating a lot of real world stuff without really asking questions or really changing anything. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, if I read a fantasy and I'm like, there's misogyny, hooray. But like, there's not really a reason internally, like logically, like, that this is happening. I'm sort of just like, okay, but this is your fantasy world. Like, why did we replicate this? Like, what is the reason? Do you know what I mean? So I love like stories that like, they give me, and again, I'm not saying that you can't, there's so many things you can do in your own stories, right? Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, like, I love work that is always asking questions. Yeah. It's always sort of pushing things forward. And at the same time, it's something that you can, like, fall in love with really deeply, mm-hmm. and fall in love with people you didn't think you were going to fall in love with, chair and root for characters you didn't think you were ever going to chair and root for. Mm-hmm. And so when I was writing this, that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
And it's been like amazing to me to have the readers who've come up and been like, oh my God, I saw that you did this or this or this, or like, man, I didn't think I was going to be 10 toes down for this character, but I am so down for it. Like, literally, like, one of my best friends will talk about somebody who other people consider to be a villain and how much she, like, literally, she's like, that's my husband. Like, do not, like, she did my book 2 event, and she literally was just like, to the audience, she was just like, that is my husband, and if you ever want to fight him, and I was just like, okay, girl, you know what I mean? But, like, that's what I love. I love...
You know he's fictional, right?
I mean, I did, like, some special art that, I mean, I'll, if you, just DM me on Instagram, I will post you the art. And she saw the jacket that I put him in, and she was just like, listen,
that's my man,
kitten. So yeah, that's like that, those are really the things for me, was wanting to write a fantasy that felt like full-bodied and that really, yeah, kind of explored that idea of, like, you know, how does, like, how do we, like, when we fracture societies in this way, or when we think about war and empire, like, how does it happen, but also how does it change, like, people on both sides of that, right, conflict, yeah, because, right, everyone is changed. We pretend that that's not everyone, but everyone is changed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is amazing. You all are, yeah, awesome. All right, so I want to talk about book maps. All 3 of you have book maps. I haven't actually seen yours yet because it wasn't in there. But I'm going to borrow the one back here.
Hand it over.
But we love book maps because we like to really see, like, what's more in your head. So can you all share with us how you came up with your maps? Did you influence the designs? Like, how did that all come to be?
I drew my map.
Yes!
The map you see in that book came out of my head. I sent it to my publisher like that, and they were like, oh shit, okay.
We got it. We'll
sold.
Mine, they got a real artist to do it for me. But it was kind of fun because I have drawn my own maps before for some of my other series. But this time my editor, Tor, was like, we could get a real artist. I mean, an artist to,
a real artist.
To do this for you. Well, I'm there's a reason I work with words. But it was kind of fun because they had me draw what they called map scraps, mm-hmm. which was a new-to-me term. And so I, like, sketched pictures of the houses. But you'll see when you see the actual book, I'm sorry I didn't bring my copy, that the map is a little bit discontinuous because, mm-hmm. the book is about dreams, and the sorceress, mm-hmm. walks through dreams, mm-hmm. from place to place. And so I didn't want to have a connected map. I didn't want it to look too geographical,
yeah.
because I wanted that sense of that she hops from place to place.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
The distance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she travels through the dreams.
Yeah. Yes.
And not through land.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's cool.
Okay, so I actually once upon a time worked as an illustrator.
Yes.
However, I'm very chaotic, and I hate maps. So I also hate timelines, which is I don't recommend it. So basically, like, I'll just go for as long as I can without any kind of map. And then when I realize during revisions that I have to actually know where things are, then I kind of draw these blobular kind of maps. Like, this is vaguely in this direction. This is vaguely in this direction. And then my publisher asks me for a map, and then I panic. And I draw a better one and send it to them, and they send it to an artist to put it together. The map for this one I really, really enjoyed because part of it is it has a cross-section of their worlds. So you can kind of see what that looks like as far as the Hollow Earth, because part of it is magic exists as particles in the air here, and it becomes more and more dense the further that you go toward the center of the world. And I used to scuba dive, so I'm familiar with things like thermoclines. Yeah. So I thought, well, like, well, what if we have like aeroclines where the density suddenly changes? So there's a diagram kind of showing that, where there's like these multiple aeroclines as you go closer and closer to the center of the world.
Okay, you being a diver makes so much sense for that. For
Yeah,
love that. That is definitely...
The complexity's in there now.
I honestly thought, she did so much research. Like, she knows what happened.
It's good you knew what happened.
Well, I think constantly about things like nitrogen narcosis, so...
Who doesn't?
I mean, I know I do. It's such a common worry on an everyday person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm one of the readers that... if you have a book map, I'm going to spend time really diving in it. If you're going to have a pronunciation guide, I'm going to know how to pronounce every character's name. Also why I love audiobooks, because audiobooks count as reading.
They do.
Yes. And I actually really love all of the audiobooks represented here.
Yeah.
If I read the author's note, I love the acknowledgments at the end. I don't know those people, but I want to know who you love and who you felt important enough to thank. So I want every part of the book. So,
because you didn't just write.
No,
the words
there were
in
between. People that were there who had to deal with the fact that you were rocking in the middle of the night,
passing food under the door,
making poor life choices for a while,
making sure you shower.
Yes. Yeah.
Listen, that's why we bring Nurse Katie with us. She gives us sustenance, and she takes care of us.
I may or may not be a wanderer, is all.
She is a wanderer.
It's the ADHD man. But can't that's why we pick books, though, because of the maps.
It's true. We do pick books based on maps. All right, so none of you are new to writing. So we've got a question we love to ask our authors. Are you a pantser or are you a plotter? Go ahead.
Okay, so I would say I'm a plotter, but I'd also say that I'm aspirationally organized, because I feel like I write out these very detailed outlines, and then I follow them, and then I realize they're wrong, and I throw out a bunch of writing, and I start over. So that is unfortunately my process. So I don't know if you describe that as plotting or pantsing or plancing. I do tend to try at least to have a plan, a detailed plan, and to follow it. I just realize along the way sometimes that I'm wrong.
That's fair. If you allow yourself some flexibility, that makes a lot of sense.
It gets harder the more traditionally published you get, because the traditional publishing houses want an outline.
Yeah,
so
you can't just...
No, you can get away without...
Yes!
Lucky woman!
I can vouch.
I've met so many authors that are like, no, I can't do that anymore.
I'll tell you, though, like, so I didn't do it either. I just sent a pitch in for the books, but...
When?
Oh, for these ones, but...
A win's a win, man.
Yeah, but from what I know from other authors that I've spoken to, you don't necessarily have to stick to that outline that you provide, and it's oftentimes expected that you don't.
It just has to be an idea of what's going to happen.
We interviewed Beth Revis in this last season. Yay. If you don't know Beth Revis, she's fantastic. She actually said, will you pack me in your suitcase? I was like, yes, come to Ohio. And she said she was a reformed pantser because she completely wanted to pants her first few books, which are amazing. Across the Universe is a fantastic book.
It's such a great series.
But when she started writing for Star Wars, because she writes for Star Wars, they were like, no, you can't do it like that.
Because
we need
Disney.
To know what you're doing.
So,
how about you?
I'm both. Because I'm so character focused, I write and do all the chaotic things my characters want to do. And then, like, so I've tried both. So I write, besides fantasy, I write mystery thriller and what I call speculative contemporary. Mm-hmm. And for my mystery thriller, I will have some kind of, like, you know, pantsing session where I'll write out an outline-ish. But then I'll start writing the book and the characters will be like, we're going to do something else. And I'm like, okay, let's see where this goes. I think that actually most authors fall into that where if you try to hyper plot,
yeah,
the characters will end up doing things that will, you know, and the thing is, again, your brain is working in the background. You will end up writing stuff that, like, feels like, you know, when you're like, oh, I feel like this just happened for the plot, right? You will end up writing stuff that doesn't feel organic, that right. The character's, like, logic is, like, literally, like, this is not who I am, yeah. Right? And if you are, like, you know, pantsing 24/7, we're going to end up like Sir George, I'm so sorry, dude, I'm gonna ream you a little bit, who is like, am I ever going to finish this next book? Because, I have written myself over here. Sorry, George.
Turn the other way because that's 100% what happens in my life.
And I mean, but he did do a lot of plotting as well. But I think I really just fall into a space where if I'm wrong about something that, you know, I want a character to do, I just let it happen and let my editor be like, you did what? With who? And then I'm like, but you loved to do. And he's like, yes, I did love that. Maybe I'm problematic for it, but yeah.
How about you, Jen?
So I have strong opinions on this. I could tell you that that's not exactly what happened with George. I mean, George has his issues. We could dish. I could tell you what happened.
Oh, we need to catch up.
Because I live in Santa Fe, and I know George.
Next
panel. Yeah.
Gossip with Jen.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you. But so I actually don't like the terms plotter and pantser because I think they're deceptive. I think pantser comes from fly by the seat of your pants, and it reflects the panic of people who don't like the idea of working without structure or outline. And plotter, we all plot. If you don't plot, you don't have a story. So I prefer like intuitive writer or pre-plotter versus intuitive. George uses gardener versus architect.
Conversation about this then.
I mean, it's people who listen to my podcast know that I rant about this all the time. So forgive me. Yeah. We're all like on like everything. It's a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
So I don't pre-plot. I don't outline my books. Like even when we talked to my tour editor about the acquisition of this book, we made that very, very clear. Is Jeffy will never, ever, ever submit an outline ahead of time because I can't. I cannot. I'm the kid at school that if we had to do an outline, I would write the paper and then make an outline from it.
Yes.
We interviewed Charlene earlier today.
Yes.
And she said the exact same thing.
Yes. No, literally, we cheat. We literally write the whole book and then we cheat and we go, here's the outline.
Here's
the
outline.
Yes.
You want to hear something that'll blow your mind? Matt Dinneman is
a pantser. He does not know how Dungeon Crawler Carl is going to end.
No.
He is seven.
We're not even joking, guys.
He's working on book 8.
And we're just like, what?
It gave me anxiety.
That's how Agatha Christie wrote.
Yeah.
She did not know who the killer was.
Absolutely, yeah.
Serious? That's amazing. Yeah.
That's a good fact. Yes.
That is
exactly me. Yes, I collect powerful, intuitive writers because we do get the thing of, and nothing against
intuitive
you,
writer.
Like, if you don't outline that, and professors will teach this too. Yeah. They'll say, well, you'll never be a novelist if you do this.
Well, I was an English teacher.
That's, exactly
that's what
they,
we taught.
And I have a creative writing degree. My degree is in creative writing. And the amount of trouble I got in school and bad grades I got in writing school for being a pantser and not doing outlines.
Yeah.
They're like, Molly, you're never going to get published. Molly. And I was like,
They think you do, but I am champion of intuitive authors.
The voices are talking. I need to listen to the voices. I don't have time to write a list. What I have time for is to make sure their words are on the page before they stop talking.
Yeah, I know what the story is when I write it.
Right. Yeah, right.
Yep.
So I actually wanted to take a second because one of the main goals in the Columbus Book Festival, they talk a lot about diversity, and I will die on the hill of diversity in children's books. Mm. That is my passion as a children's librarian, that we need windows and mirrors. Yes, thank you. So I want to talk about the fantasy genre specifically. Only 25% of fantasy authors are BIPOC authors, which is it's an alarming statistic, in my opinion. So I've kind of, this question is for Andrea and Ehi. How has being an author changed by your unique paradigm?
God, I'm surprised we even have 25%.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
I can go.
Please address the issue of diversity in publishing.
In
10 words or less.
No. Okay. So I
want the outline first.
Okay.
Though.
Do you want it? Okay. So when we talk about diversity is for all of us. Mm-hmm. It's for everybody.
Yeah,
it's not.
Sure.
It's not the just to be clear. This is not a. You are going to answer this question because this is the other category, blah, 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 blah. This, like, diversity, when we talk about diversity, we're not just talking about racial and ethnic. We're talking about age, geographical location you grew up in, right? Because, like, anybody from California here? Anyone from Cali? Anyone from, like, Florida or something?
I live in Florida.
Okay, anyone from, like, Mississippi or, like, the Midwest? Midwesterners in here? Well, okay. Do you think that a Midwesterner, like, if you grew up in the Midwest, your specific paradigm is going to be the same as somebody who grew up in California? No, absolutely not. Even like in your family, your siblings, you are not the same people, no, right? Yeah. So when we talk about diversity, we mean it in that sense, but specifically we're talking about this in publishing, mm-hmm. because publishing has a very bad habit of like not thinking about the wide world, right? And so that's specifically what we're talking about it, right? Okay, so I think starting on that, I'll say that like being like, growing up the way I've grown up has changed and, of course, shaped the kind of story I'm going to write, but also the kind of story shape I'm going to be drawn to. There are some people who will say, like, I've had editors tell me something like, oh, I think the story should start here and not here. And I'll say, like, that's great, but then you would have told Hayao Miyazaki to start Princess Mononoke with San in the woods, which wouldn't make any sense to us because we start with Ashitaka and we know why we should care about San. And you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that like for me, it changes like the kind of story I write. It changes kind of like what I highlight or what I care about. And also like for me, one of the things that's really important to me to bring in fantasy is to have a world that is populated by everyone, right? And that has always been super important to me because that's what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And a world where I didn't feel like I had to perform an identity because there's such a thing as performance, right? It's a world that I wanted people to pick up and be like, oh, you did this? Oh, and I'm like, yes, that was for you, you know? And if you know, you know. If you don't, okay, you'll learn, right? Or maybe you won't,
right?
So I think that our experiences color and change what we write. That's just a fact of life. And I think that, like, you know, any romance readers in the room, obviously, we have romance readers, right? If you've ever read, like, Kennedy Ryan, right? Okay, and then Kimberly Lemming, different styles of writing, different, like, and again, it's because they are different people, different paradigms, right? And we can be like, you shared this one identity that we can share and like celebrate, but at the same time, like, we have to, like, you know what I mean, come to each book as it is and like love each book as it is.
I mean, that statistic of the 25%, I'm not terribly surprised just because publishing itself is overwhelmingly white. You see, like, who the editors are, who the executives are. It's basically, it's just a fact of what it is. So I feel like sometimes, I mean, you'll see this in reviews where people say that they are not connecting with the characters and they're not relating to them. So I feel like publishing sometimes is a microcosm of that. For myself, like, I grew up when fantasy was actually quite homogenous. So I always wanted to be a writer. Epic fantasy was my first love. I do read widely. There's a lot that I enjoy reading. But epic fantasy was what I fell in love with first. And when I started writing it, I wrote, like, what I thought it was, which was, like, white farm boy goes and saves the world, right?
Because it's the only example you had.
Yeah, that was the only example that I had, right?
Well, so, we have a mirror.
We didn't really even have female characters that were, I mean.
There were some, but not as as many, right?
I mean, it wasn't until, like, Katniss. Women started going, oh, so I see myself.
Like, those two big series at that same time were Twilight, where Bella is.
Okay, I'm older than that, so.
Well, we are, too.
Okay,
we are
like, basically, Octavia Butler was out, but people did not center Octavia Butler.
Octavia Butler didn't get hyped till what, recent?
Yeah.
The pandemic is when her name started becoming super popular on the socials. Yeah. And it's like, where have you guys been?
Yeah.
She's been out here hustling.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the thing that makes me angry sometimes is when I say, like, someone who, you know, when you get on Reddit.
Oh, God.
Nothing good.
Okay, that's a great way to start a sentence.
You know, when you get on Reddit.
A villain origin story. And people are just like, I would like a book that is.
Oh, my God. Yes.
And then you're like, here are 15 books. And they're like, no, not like that. More like this. And you're like, but I gave you a list of 15.
Okay, see, like, I see the opposite where somebody will ask for, like, oh, like, I'd like a really good romance. And, like, inevitably people are suggesting things like Mistborn. And I'm like, okay. Like, not, you know, like, I love Brandon Sanderson, too. However, not
that's not,
not
the
a
romance.
Great example. Yeah, so, I mean, you see these the same titles being...
recycled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like trying to think, where was I going with this? I don't want this to be like
I feel like there's so many books right now that have the this and this, mm-hmm. the this and the this, mm-hmm. and they're all like, you know, the same. Yes.
Yeah.
We need to fill. It has to have a cartoon on it, or it has to have a dragon on it.
Right. Okay, but don't come from my cartoon covers.
But I think what you were saying or what you were getting at is how when you first, because this is like a conversation that even we had about like Jenny Han, for example, right? When you first start publishing, you believe because you've only seen people center certain kinds of stories that you have to write that kind of story and take yourself out of it. And that's part of why I also talk about story shapes, right? Because now everyone is talking about, oh, Save the Cat, and if it doesn't follow Save the Cat, or if it doesn't follow Romancing the Beat, then it's not that kind of story. Mm-hmm. And I disagree. Right. I'm like, some of the most deeply romantic books you will ever read do not follow Romancing the Beat. Some of the most epic books you will ever read.
And Gwen Hayes wrote that from Save the Cat.
But it is. It's the self-perpetuating cycle.
Yes.
Because we want, they want to see more of the same. And then, you know, that's,
Save the Cat book can also be really overwhelming if you're starting out, though.
Oh, yeah.
If you're just picking up and starting writing first off, and you're like, I'm going to do this for the first time, and you pick up Save the Cat, and it's like, okay, these are the five steps you need to do. You're like...
And if you're an intuitive writer, it doesn't work anyway.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Yeah, it doesn't. And it's also like, if you're coming from a different cultural perspective, like, again, also, every book is different.
Yeah.
The way I think about this when I think about writing in the zeitgeist or whatever, what people want these days, when they talk about like, oh, I want, like, and this is probably why I talked about Reddit, right? When people say like, oh, I want something new, but then they'll go buy a book that is, and then they'll get annoyed because this book is just like the last book or whatever. Yeah. It's because editors are telling people, well, this was popular, just follow the formula,
right?
Which takes out the whole point of us being artists and us actually bringing ourselves to the work and being like, you never thought you would root for this person, but here you go. You read it and now you're like, damn, that's my husband. Do you know what I mean? Or like, you never thought you'd be really interested in a fantasy that is, you know, like, you know, dealing with climate change or we didn't even have like things like cli-fi were not even really a thing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like now, like, people are able to discover all these different kinds of books and fall in love with them.
Yes.
I do have a lot of hope for the future, because I feel like we have a lot more examples of the different things that can be done.
Yeah, like what you were saying. Actually, you both touched on it, but Leslie Penelope, who's a wonderful fantasy writer.
She's so lovely.
Super smart, gorgeous black woman. I mean, she looks like a supermodel, went to Howard. But she told me the same thing, that when she first started writing fantasy, and she grew up in a pretty empowered family, she wrote it with all white characters.
Yeah.
And she said it like only occurred to her later that she didn't have to. And I found that astonishing and awful. And
yeah, it's fantasy. You can do anything you want.
There are dragons, people.
Make your own magic system. We don't care. Make it good.
So I want to make sure we have time for audience questions. Oh, yeah. So I just want to ask each of you, what's next? What's coming out next that you can share with our audience? Because we know there are things that you're not allowed to share. You can just tell me later. But what can you tell them?
We'll just post it on Twitter.
I know I announced a doc romanticy. And what I meant by that was I announced a, for the Game of Thrones girlies who wanted something deeply epic. So if you wanted a world that was that intense, but also deeply romantic, that book would be for you. But actually, I'm releasing a mystery thriller soon that also has been described as something that will make you sob, but also make you like just not able to, yeah. And I might be releasing something that is in the shape of a whoremantasy.
I love it. I love that portmanteau too. Or
like, you're stressed because it's a little horrific, but you're also just like also into it because it's fantastical and also romantic. So that I'm working on those things, and I'm also working on like a romance that I'm sure will get shelved as women's fiction romance. So
that's okay. I'll still buy it.
Thank you.
Get me a cartoon cover.
Not all cartoon covers are created equal.
That's just true. So my book just came out this week, mm-hmm. so I feel like I get a little bit of slack on what's next. But
okay. We'll allow it.
Okay, thank you.
But only for the next 10 minutes.
So I am working on my revision of book two. I wanted to get it done before I went on book tour. That didn't happen, but that's what I'm working on right now. That comes out July 2026 because it's traditional publishing and takes forever. But I have an indie series I've been doing for a while that's started with Dark Wizard under Jeffy Kennedy, and I've done two trilogies so far and two books of the third trilogy, and I swear, I promise, if anyone here is a reader of that series, that book nine is coming out at the end of October.
Book nine.
It's like, I don't know, book three or book nine, and then it will be done, and yeah.
You complained about her being on book nine, and you're on book what? You're on book what?
She just named like 10 books she's writing right now.
Yeah.
What number is it, Ehi?
I can neither confirm nor deny. But I know what Andrea is working on next.
Pass the buck.
So this is the start of a trilogy. The second book, The War Beyond, is coming out November 4th. I'm currently drafting the third book. I also decided to write another book in the meantime because my kids are getting a little bit older, so they're not quite as needy. So I have a psychological suspense coming out called Paper Dolls, and it follows the estranged daughter of a family influencer family. They're like white Asian, and one of their family friends and fellow influencer disappears, presumed dead, and so she does what she said she would never do. She goes home to try to protect her younger sister. So there's sisters in that one as well. Unfortunately, February 2027.
No. Traditional publishing.
You say unfortunately, but it is
like,
worth the wait.
Okay, and then you're like, guys, it's not coming till 2035. I'm sorry.
Just actually join newsletters so that you can get sneak peeks.
Seriously,
for things.
Yeah, follow them on the socials too.
So if you have a question for the panelists, just raise your hand. We'll try to I'll try to repeat them if I hear them correctly, so we can make sure everyone can hear the questions in the room. So over here. So the question is, she's writing her romanticy. She wants to be inclusive with diversity. So how do you choose the lens that you're writing from?
This is one of those.
Who is it? Go get your car.
Please move your vehicle. This is one of those questions where I'm like, how much time do you have? just because it is a very complicated and complex question, especially when you're thinking about, you know, what lens are you trying to tell the story through? I feel like it's important to have a diverse world just because this what we exist in already. And I feel like if you treat people respectfully, have a sensitivity reader regardless, but do your research, treat people respectfully.
Good gracious.
Who owns the brown Lexus?
Probably with the Honda driver right now. They're blocking the entrance exit.
I think when you think about whose lens are you telling it through, you have to be a lot more careful and considerate as far as, like, why is this the person, why is this the lens that I'm telling it through? Am I the person to tell it? And, yeah, I just feel like it's one of those questions that we could talk about a lot, just because it is a very complicated and complex question.
Yeah, so catch us in the siding line and let's discuss.
I've got a short answer that's not diversity related, but generally you choose the point of view from the character who has the most stakes in whatever scene you're telling.
Yeah. And I would also say stay true to your voice. Mm-hmm. However you feel your writing voice is and how you want to tell your story. While diversity does matter, and it is important, it's not everybody's job to make sure that every face is seen. I'm not saying it's not important, guys. What I'm saying is you still have to be true to yourself as a writer, or it won't come on the page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. No, I have very bad ADHD, and I'm in a pantser, and that book screws me up. If you're looking for a book that will make you feel good about writing, Bird by Bird. Mm. Bird by Bird is an excellent.
By Anne Lemoo.
Yes.
Yeah, it is really good. I'm not even a writer, but I enjoy it.
Bird by Bird is wonderful because it's not about you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. Bird by Bird talks about follow the process, follow your words, follow your intuition, listen to yourself. The book will come. Yep. Mm-hmm. Listen to the Invisible Friends. They're going to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. You continue.
Okay, right here.
You guys kind of all come.
So the question is, what big hurdles did you face in your career through publishing?
Publishing, writing.
Writing, any of it.
Okay.
I think the first hurdle, because I studied medicine, neurolinguistics, English chemistry, just like a lot of different things. When I first wanted to get into publishing, a lot of what I heard was, and I would hear this from agents and editors, my God, I love this book, but I don't know how I would sell it. And what they meant by that is, we don't think that we know how to talk about this book where you're going to find an audience that is different from the ideal. So when I said earlier the girlies are complex, I've had conversations with people in publishing who say things like, oh, no, women only want X. Right. And I'm like, I have questions about that, right?
Do they though?
right. Or like people say things like, oh, men don't read. And I'm like, again, I have questions, right? So it was really a lot of that, a lot of like, how are we going to do this? You know, and that was like the nice way of saying, how do we package you? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And how do we get you to perform in specific ways that we think will work? Do you know what I mean? And then after that, I kind of run into like people reading characters. And then also like, again, we are writers, right? We're not, how you respond to a book is how you respond to a book. Everybody's going to have their own unique response to a character. But like when I read books, I'm trying to meet all these people for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not bringing like, oh, this is probably this character. Well, okay, in the back of my mind, my writer brain is doing that, okay? But I'm trying to meet the book where it is and mm-hmm. see it as it is. And so therefore, I'm not like, okay, well, you know, I've never seen this story shape before, so it must be wrong, or it's, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. And I think I ran into that also a lot too. This business can be entirely subjective. I've had readers tell me like, well, I really, really love this book, but I had to listen to it on audiobook, or I really, really love it, but I had to read it on paper, like that kind of thing. Or, you know, a reader tell me like, oh, man, like, I have to, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, publishing is a long and fraught journey. If you're interested in it, you have to have the stomach of steel, because people really will be out here with a spoon trying to slurp up your guts. So hope that answers the question.
For me, it was that I was writing cross-genre. Mm-hmm. What I had a Catherine Asaro, if anybody's read her, mm-hmm. she read my first book that I couldn't sell, and she told me that it was because I was writing cross-genre, mm-hmm. and that it would be like wading through hip-deep snow. Mm-hmm. And it was. And she said, but keep going. And that I was stubborn enough that, you know, because people kept telling me, you really need to write either fantasy or romance. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no.
Apparently not.
That's right.
What if you did both?
I think the biggest thing is just, like, persistence. I looked at the oldest query I could find. I know I'd sent some before because I had sent some on paper with a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Back in the day. Yes.
But my first query I could find on my email was from 2007. Ooh. And it took me...
That's about when I started querying.
It took me until 2013, so 6 years, to get an agent. And then we went out with that manuscript, and I got zero responses. So I did what you are always told to do. I wrote another book. Mm-hmm. And then we did vast revisions on that. We went out with that, and I got two nice rejections. And then I wrote another book. And that's when I got my book deal. And all in all, it was 12 years mm-hmm. and 7 manuscripts. Okay, yeah. So, you know, sometimes it takes some time, and... This is the thing. Like, it doesn't mean that you're a bad writer. I always tell people, like, rejection doesn't mean that you're a bad writer. Sometimes you're just not hitting at the right time. But if you keep writing, you're going to keep getting better. And someday you're going to be good enough that it's going to be really hard for people to say no to you. Yes. And that's the point that you want to reach.
Yes. I mean, I've been queuing since that time frame. I've been queuing since 06, and I've still not been picked up.
I am not queuing because I don't write.
Not everybody gets picked up. It is, like she said, steel stomach. Brick heart, because they will ruin everything you love.
Yeah.
One more question.
Okay.
Blue shirt.
Okay.
Yeah, you. What are you reading? And so, how are you reading it? Audiobook, Kindle, paperback,
or Mac? So what are you reading, and what format are you reading in? That's a good question.
Okay.
I was reading, but no.
Oh, I'm so unfortunately, right now I'm mostly reading ARCs, so advanced reader copies. It's fun, but it's also like it's for work, right? Recently a book that I would highly recommend that's coming out early next year is The Poet Empress by Chantal. So I have two young kids. I finished this thing in like 2 days. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put it down. I literally could not put it down. It's one of the few books that I've actually like stayed. I love my sleep, and I stayed up late to finish it because I just couldn't stop reading. So I would highly recommend it.
I am reading a debut from a gal that I met at Phoenix Fan Fusion a few weeks ago, and it's called Dance of Lies by Brittany Arena.
I just read that.
Brittany is delightful, and she gave me a copy of her book, and it's really good.
Okay, so like I'm writing multiple things at once. I am reading many books, and I love audiobook for some. I love just physical copy for others. I really struggle with like EOC. Because I'm just not like a touch screen person. The Raven Scholar by Antonia Hodgson. That book. Listen, I just want to talk, Antonia. I am so like listen. Loved. Emma Wong had A Blood Over Bright Haven. Mm-hmm. Like that book is a banger. Also just read Problematic Summer Romance. Yes. So and then like reread. So Shirley Nobugobi, who was here earlier, has Between Friends and Lovers, which is always such a delicious read. Like, my God. But she has another book that's coming out next year that I'm like, we're all going to collectively lose our minds over that book. That's all I'm going to say.
And sadly, it's not available for pre-order yet because we did ask her that earlier.
Yes. There's so many books. And like, I just finished Robert Jackson Bennett's The Tainted Cup. I'm reading A Drop of Corruption now. For me, it's just really like, what genre do you want for what I'm reading? Because I love to keep reading. But the thing is, and I think it's the thing we would say for all of us, is we read widely, right? Yeah. And if you ever want to write or even, you know, read widely. Yeah. Read all the time, right?
So we do that on our podcast. We actually call ourselves genre fluid.
Yes.
Because we read across genres. Yes. I love it. We want to read everything. This summer, we're taking a break from the podcast, but my friend Nurse Katie in the back there, she and I are doing Smut Girl Summer. So if you want to talk about smutty books, find our social media because we love some smutty books. In the winter, we'll do Warm Winter Bitches because that's how we roll. I read across genres, but in the summer when I'm doing children's librarian stuff and I have to be Miss April all day, I need to read smutty books at home. So we got to wrap up, but I just want to thank our panelists so much. You are all remarkable, and their books are amazing. You can get all of their books.
Yeah.
You can get all their books on the second floor. If it's okay, we're going to let them go first because they are going to be doing signings immediately after this. So grab one of their books at the official bookstore and then have them sign it. Or if you brought your own from home, that's allowed too, which doesn't always happen at cons. But hey, we love that. Thank you so much. This was amazing.
Thank you so much for moderating.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, great job.